Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg, together with the intrepid Mr. Dennis Horowitz.
Ursula, the summer has gone so fast. This is our next to last time together on Fridays. I'm going to miss this.
I'm going to miss it too, Dennis.
All right, let's start this broadcast, as we always do on Fridays, with a look back at news from the Ames Tribune this past week, and in last Saturday's Trib, it reported that the United Way of Story County kicked off its annual Day of Caring on Friday as volunteers spread out to give back to the community. In Story County, the event is the kickoff to the United Way's annual campaign fundraiser. This year's goal is $2,222,222, and they've already raised about one-third of that. Saturday's Trib also had word that Main Street volunteers in Ames harvested 200 pounds of sweet potatoes from downtown planters on Friday and donated most of that to Food at First. The potatoes were planted last spring as part of the Main Street Community Gardens program. Food at First provides hot meals to about 100 people every day and provides groceries for around 300 families a week. The potatoes harvested last Friday will be used for both purposes. Also, on Saturday, the Trib reported that Ames Law Enforcement held its annual Dunkin' Donuts Cops on a Rooftop Special Olympics on Friday. Three officers from the Ames and Iowa State University Police Department stood on the roof of the Dunkin' Donuts store in Ames and danced with inflatable donuts. Yeah, that was quite a sight. Community members had a chance to donate to the Special Olympics fundraiser event. There was more in Saturday's Trib, including word that the Ames Public Library is looking for a replacement for current library director Lynn Carey, who is retiring at the end of the year. Carey has worked at the library for 35 years and became its director in 2013. Sunday's Trib had word that residents in a neighborhood west of Ames and just over the Boone County line are trying to get Boone County officials to clear what they believe is a clogged drainage tile that's keeping water in their yards. A Boone County engineer said crews have inspected the area numerous times and that while the tile drains into a facility controlled by the county, the tile itself is privately owned and not the county's responsibility. There was more in Sunday's Trib, including word that Iowa State University was planning to ask the state's Board of Regents to let it start the design phase of a new $75 million veterinary diagnostic lab this week. The current lab is the only accredited vet lab in Iowa, and it's used to teach vet students and to test potential animal disease samples. The university wants to demolish three small buildings and construct a new lab that would have between 83 and 85,000 square feet. One more note from Sunday's Trib. The Iowa State University Police Department has debuted its Fall Don't Drink and Drive campaign with the help of a new car design. The vehicles have been visually transformed into a half-taxi, half-squad car with the help of new decals. The back of the car looks like a taxi. It's bright yellow and has the phrase, "This ride costs $11." On the top of the hood, ISU police are displaying the cost of drunk driving, which is upwards of $11,000. That includes fines, court costs, probation fees, lawyer's fees, increased insurance costs, and other things. You get the idea. Campus police hope Iowa State students and everyone else get the message. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's edition reported that more than 60 people had gathered over the weekend in Ames to learn how social justice and climate change can be closely linked. The Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Ames hosted a Rise for Climate, Jobs, and Justice workshop on Saturday. Participants talked about new ways to make a difference in Ames to fight climate change. Church member Irv Kloss, who appeared here on Local Talk on Monday, organized the workshop in order to bring new strategies to help the environment. Also Tuesday, the Trib reported that launching a canoe or kayak into the South Skunk River just got easier in Story County. Work on a canoe launch near Cambridge Pond, just west of 580th Avenue, north of Cambridge, is finishing up, and a similar launch along the river at Peterson Park, about 4 miles north of Ames, has already been finished. Cost of both of the projects was about $44,000, with half of it coming from a grant from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources Water Trails Program. Also in Tuesday's paper, pictures from Monday night's annual Ames High School Homecoming Parade, which made its way down Main Street. Hundreds of people, including me, lined the streets to watch the school's athletes and its band pass by, and it's safe to say a good time was had by all of us. In Wednesday's Tribune, if you thought we've had a wet summer, well, you'd be right, but it was nowhere near a record. Listen to this. Ames received a bit less than 8.5 inches of rain last month. Yes, that's a lot, but it's not a record for August, which is more than 14.5 inches set back in 1954. So far this year, the Weather Service said we've had more than 42 inches of rain. In June alone, one storm dumped nearly 7 inches on parts of the area, causing, as you'll remember, flash flooding that covered roads, farm fields, and Brookside Park here in Ames. So far this month, Ames has received nearly 5 inches of rain, but things are expected to be dry here through the weekend. Also Wednesday, word that the federal trial for an Ames man indicted on charges of mailing an envelope filled with what was feared to be anthrax to a Nevada teacher has been delayed while prosecutors and defense lawyers take part in plea negotiations. 66-year-old Mondell V. Olson is charged with mailing threatening communications. He could face 5 years in prison. His trial had been scheduled to begin last week. Wednesday's trip also had word that an Iowa State University alum and NASA astronaut, Clayton Anderson, is providing students with real-world aerospace engineering experience. Anderson has taught at ISU for 5 years. He says he's here to inspire freshmen to come back to the program as sophomores, sophomores to juniors, juniors to seniors. One more note in Wednesday's trip, a feature story that also appeared in the Nevada Journal about a Nevada couple who has taken salt to a whole new level. Jennifer Knox and her husband Colin Switzer have come up with their own recipes and names for their products, which so far include 13 salts and 3 sugars. They've been offering their creations to shoppers at farmers' markets in Des Moines and Ames this past summer. Among the names they've given to their new salt flavors, Herky Perky, that of course for Iowa Hawkeyes fans, and Sisalt for Iowa State fans. You can find out much more about these new entrepreneurs of salt in Wednesday's trip. Thursday's paper reported that the Ames City Council kept the South Grand Avenue Extension Project on track this week by approving the purchase of a key piece of land. By unanimous vote, council members agreed to have the city buy about 15 acres of open field that will be used for the partial extension of South 5th Street westward. Council also unanimously approved authorizing city staff to draw up an agreement that would allow the Burke Corporation of Nevada to temporarily end or send wastewater to the Ames Water Pollution and Control Facility. Burke, which processes fully cooked meat products, plans a major expansion in Nevada, and that city's treatment plant won't be able to handle the increased wastewater until it's expanded. The council also unanimously approved a 10-year lease with John Deere, which plans to develop a spray lab building at the Iowa State Research Park along South Riverside Drive, west of the municipal airport. Deere wants about 50 acres of the city's airport farmland in order to field test spray equipment. Thursday's trip also reported that Ames school board members saw the latest design for the new high school construction project this past week. The newest schematic design was displayed in a 3D model from a bird's-eye view of the current school site. Design architects said they're still in the brainstorming phase for such things as student parking. The school board will meet September 24th to look at the final schematic design for the project. Thursday's paper also reported on the first day of testimony in the trial of the man accused of kidnapping and assaulting a woman at Franklin Park in Ames 2 years ago. 24-year-old defendant Devontis David Voigt looked straight ahead as the woman testified in graphic language about being pulled from her car and dragged into the park where she said she was assaulted. Trial is expected to continue into the middle of next week. One more note from Thursday's trip about the Ames Fire Department, which conducted training this week adjacent to the parking lot of the Fairway store at Burnett and Sixth. Crews were working on a variety of training projects inside a vacant apartment building on Clark Avenue. Today's trip, Friday's, reports that the Mamie Dowd Eisenhower birthplace is now for sale in Boone. The Boone County Historical Society has listed the property at 709 Carroll Street with Friedrich Realty of Ames for the price of $184,000. Historical Society President Janet Tate said the Society had told the city and Boone County that if they could no longer support the group with money, they might have to start selling their assets. The Eisenhower birthplace has been closed to the public since last fall. Today's trip also reports that Ames has been ranked as the second best college town in the United States, behind only Ithaca, New York, which is the home of Cornell University. That ranking comes from Livability, which rates college towns on the basis of such things as median salary and the number of jobs in the education sector. And one more note from today's trip. The Central Iowa Junk Jaunt, that's what it's called, takes place today through Sunday. That's an annual shopping road trip which takes shoppers into or near such Central Iowa places as Ames, Gilbert, Story City, Randall, Jewell, Stratford, Boone, Cambridge, and Roland. You can read all about it in today's trip. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. And a reminder, I'll be back here on Monday with a look at news from around the state of Iowa this past week. And it has been a busy week indeed for news. And part of that busy week involves our first guest today. His name is Keith Puntany. And he is one of the Iowa landowners who have contested the Dakota Access Pipeline that's been laid on their farmland. Now, joined by the Sierra Club Iowa chapter, their lawsuit was heard before the Iowa Supreme Court this past Wednesday. Landowners are charging the Iowa Utilities Board and Dakota Access, who built and run the pipeline, with wrongful use of eminent domain. The Iowa Sierra Club is arguing environmental issues. Keith, welcome to Local Talk again today. Tell us what happened at the Supreme Court on Wednesday.
Well, the Supreme Court questioned both sides very, very extensively. This is a Rubik's Cube of issues that are far-reaching in effect, not only to Iowa, but the whole nation and the pipeline industry and everybody are looking at this. In fact, there were some folks from Nebraska who are in the fight on the XL pipeline that came over just to sit and watch, you know, the process that was going on. The Supreme Court explored all of the issues from both sides, asked very pertinent questions. And by the way, the hearing, which lasted a little over an hour, was up on YouTube yesterday. For some reason, it's down today, but I would expect it to go back up on YouTube shortly.
Well, what arguments briefly did you make to the Supreme Court?
The main argument that we put forward on the Supreme Court is this is what the legislature tried to classify as a merchant, okay? This is a private for-profit company that wanted to come into the state of Iowa and use eminent domain, which is basically a state power, okay? And the Iowa Constitution, Article 1, Section 18, basically says ownership and use of private property. I'll use the term fundamental right. In the hearing, you'll hear the word inalienable right used for that. Whether you talk about it either way, ownership of property is central to both to our economic system and to capitalism as a whole. So that's what we're arguing for.
These are complex arguments, and there are a variety of potential outcomes. Again, you say the Rubik's Cube. What would you like to see happen as a result of the hearing? Ideally, what would you like to see happen?
In the closing, Bill Hannigan, our attorney, asked that the case be decided in our favor, that this was an unlawful use of eminent domain, which in that case would be a trespass by the pipe on the landowners who were taken by condemnation. And he asked that the case be sent back to the district court to fashion an appropriate remedy. And, of course, the remedy the landowners want is to have the pipe removed from their property.
That's a drastic remedy. Obviously, the pipeline is in place. It's pumping 500,000 barrels of oil a day. How do you see that playing out, potentially?
Well, we think it's very possible. There is precedent. Texas doesn't allow eminent domain. Texas has a lot of law about trespass out there, including the fact that if the Supreme Court were to decide this is a trespass, it's not only the pipeline, but every gallon of oil that went through the pipeline, that's a trespass. So there are 9 shippers out there that are watching this closely, too, as a result of this thing. It's pretty clear the outcome to Energy Transfer Partners or Dakota Access is severe. They're making $2.7 million a day, about $85 million a month. If you shut the flow of the pipe down, they've got to find a way around. It also opens up other legal issues for those people who signed what is termed voluntary easements, which really were duress easements. So there's a whole lot of things out there that are potential.
If the company were not forced to shut down the pipeline, what other remedies might be available to you, to the landowners? In other words, what else might happen?
Well, then at the district court level, they could determine there are monetary damages. And the monetary damages would include the issue of trespass and then also the issue of all the oil flowing through the pipeline. You know, and nobody knows where we're going to go at this point. We got to first get to a final decision from the Supreme Court.
Talk about those monetary damages. How severe are they for individual landowners?
Quite severe. From the standpoint of eminent domain people, I've had crop loss every year. I've lost 100 bushel of corn or more, and quite a lot of beans in the right-of-way. I've not been repaid for any of that for 3 years while this process is going on. We're looking at tens of thousands of dollars to remediate the farmland because they've totally destroyed the soil structure that's there. I've now got sheet erosion going across my farm, so I'm talking about additional tiling. My estimate for tiling is over $36,000 just for the tiling, you know, part of this alone. And we're going to end up recontouring my land to try and slow down the sheet erosion. So the overall concept of remediation of this whole 350-mile route is going to be quite expensive.
Talk about the quality of questioning by the Supreme Court justices. You indicated it was a very high-quality discussion there for that hour.
Yeah, if you've got an hour, if you want to be a lawyer, go look at this Supreme Court argument because it was quite extensive. The pipeline company argued that this was moot, the pipes in the ground. It was just a handful of rebellious landowners who were there. And to be quite honest, I didn't hear a single Supreme Court justice buy that argument. They said this is obviously something of great importance, not only to the people of Iowa from a universal sense, but to these landowners. And again, they argued that the public use doctrine, which is out there for eminent domain, is something different than convenience and necessity, which is the actual language in the law. So they have a difficult decision to make in terms of the precedent of this, because this is without precedent.
Now, once they make that decision, as you've indicated, this is not the end of the story. The end of the story can't even be seen. Talk about the levels that have to be reached here before eventually a final outcome is. I mean, this is not the end of the story, whatever they decide.
No, this will go back possibly to the district court to fashion a remedy if we win. The district court may, in fact, get the Iowa Utility Board back involved, you know, in terms of some parts of the actual fact-finding and decision-making in terms of that sort of thing. All of that's appealable back up the chain to the Court of Appeals and eventually back to the Supreme Court unless you try and go directly back through the Supreme Court, which is another possibility. And then, as I've indicated to you, there's all these other issues out there on crops and remediation. And those of us who were condemned, obviously that will affect our condemnation process, because if we win, it's trespass, not condemnation. But the other side of this is there's a whole bunch of folks out there that got arrested for trespass on their own land. That may open up a whole another set of issues. Can they go back and get their, you know, their themselves cleared and get their fines back? And the trespass, in fact, was the oil company, not the landowner. So, like I said, this is a Rubik's Cube that just opens up lots of issues.
This is September of 2018. I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Would you anticipate this would still be going on 2 years from today?
I think that would be optimistic.
Give me a time frame.
I can't. This is a oil company that's making $2.7 million a day with money to burn, and they can run this as long as they want.
How high and how far can you take this? You had indicated in a previous interview on this broadcast this is not appealable to the U.S. Supreme Court, whatever happens. Is that right?
Well, it is under the Dormant Commerce Clause, which is the federal statute that's out there. We don't think it's going to be accepted at the U.S. Supreme Court, but that's another fight that's out there.
Are you going to take that fight all the way, potentially, to the U.S. Supreme Court, at least try to get it there?
As long as I live.
Oh, my.
This is one of those fundamental issues about legacy for those of us who have farmland and passing it down to our kids and grandkids.
Bottom line, we're almost out of time here. You're waiting for the court's decision. No one knows when it's going to come. Are you tense about this? How do you feel as you're waiting day by day for this decision?
We were ecstatic yesterday, all of us, or Wednesday, I'm sorry. We finally got our day in court. We finally got our issues before the court. We heard really great questions from every one of the justices on the court, both ways. Okay, I mean, this is not a done deal. We could still lose the case, but it's been 4 years getting to this point.
Keith Putney, thank you for joining us today on Local Talk. And I presume you're going to be back again.
I thank you very much for inviting me.
Keith Putney, who is one of the landowners contesting the Dakota Access Pipeline and who appeared to the state Supreme Court this past Wednesday arguing the case. That case still to be decided, and a lot of people around the state of Iowa are waiting for that decision.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are your hosts today, Mr. Dennis Hart and Ursula Rudenberg. And it is that time of month again. Mary Rankin is here. Mary Rankin is the Sustainability Director for Iowa State University and also for the City of Ames. Welcome back, Mary.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Mary, you have a 10-year anniversary.
Oh, my gosh. It's so exciting. We're in it, actually, right
We're
now.
We're in it. It's happening.
Yes. In 2008, at that time, our president at Iowa State University was President Gregory Joffre. And President Joffre took on a personal initiative through a lot of wonderful support from champions around campus, of course, but to start a Live Green initiative to focus on having a central point of contact and a central sort of collaboration point for sustainability efforts at Iowa State. Not as though we weren't doing sustainability things, but we really didn't have that overarching focus. President Joffre started that, and now we're celebrating 10 years.
And it was called Live Green.
Yes, okay. Live Green.
Now, Mary, were you hired as a part of that, or were you already here before that?
I actually was hired as a part of that. So President Joffre put together an executive committee consisting of a lot of administrative folks around Iowa State University. And one of the recommendations that came out of the work of that committee was to hire a sustainability director. So I actually owe them quite a lot. And it's actually one of my favorite initiatives they came up with, of course.
So this is the anniversary of your working here as well.
So I actually started in 2009, so a little while after the initiative started. So actually, to your point, in January of 2019, I will have been here 10 years. So I am celebrating a birthday in January, yes.
Okay, Mary, where did you come to us from?
I originated from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. I've been in the community since 1983 when I first came to be a student at Iowa State University. I remained in the community because I enjoyed it so much. And I actually did a couple of things overseas. But then I landed after graduating with my master's degree at the Iowa Department of Natural Resources in Des Moines.
And what were you doing at the DNR?
I started with their recycling technical assistance team. And then after a few years, I took over management of their statewide volunteer program. And then this position came up, and it just combined everything I was passionate about. Plus, I got to be at Iowa State University with all the amazing energy and vision and passion of these amazing students, such as the two that are next to me here today. And it's just been phenomenal.
Before you introduce your co-host or your co-conspirators, tell us a little bit just what is the Go Green. What is that actually?
So the Live Green Initiative.
Live Green.
Yes,
sorry.
That's okay. The Live Green Initiative focuses on really engaging everyone on the university campus toward how they personally and in their colleges, departments, in their business units, in student organization, through classes, through operations, can be more sustainably minded and put forward more acts and decisions that have that sustainability consideration in mind. And it's all toward not only, you've seen the Brundtland Commission definition of sustainable development, we're certainly considering the impacts and the experiences of the generation that we are in right now, but also all the generations that follow us. And so we're very much looking at how can everyone get involved in this, have a part in it, have ownership and connection, so that not only do we have increased education and awareness, but also we engage our campus community in sustainability, and also then we empower folks that after they leave Iowa State, they take these opportunities into their workplace, into the communities that they may live in, organizations they may belong to, and certainly as they raise the next generation.
So there's an educational component to it.
Most definitely. And I have a team now. When I first started, I was single in my role, but now I have a team. And my team consists of all students. And it's fantastic. And so everything that we do, we talk about, it needs to have three E's included. It needs to have education, engagement, and empowerment. And most certainly, our 10-year campaign that Molly and Maddie have been so instrumental in making sure it actually has come to fruition and it's available not only to Iowa State community members, but also the Ames community members, certainly has those three E's included.
Okay, so introduce your cohorts here.
Okay, fantastic. Well, I have Molly Breen with me, and also Maddie Blandon.
Hello, everyone.
And you guys, why don't you just say a little bit about your background, what year you are at Iowa State, and why this is something you guys agreed to take part in.
Definitely. So I am Molly, and I'm actually a senior at Iowa State. I am studying finance, and I've worked with the Live Green Initiative for 3 years now. So 3 out of the 4 years I've been here, and I have loved it. I was really excited when Mary came to me with the opportunity to work on the 10-year anniversary because this is something I'm very passionate about, and I really love engaging students and just teaching them all about what the Office of Sustainability has done for us. So I guess that's why I really wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah, and this is Madeline, and I am double majoring in marketing and event management at Iowa State, and I'm also a senior. And how I kind of came into the position, I was a part of the Green Umbrella, which is a club on campus that focuses on sustainability. And I was friends with Molly. She was telling me all about her projects. So I approached Mary and said, hey, I want to be a part of this. So it was very exciting to join the team and jump in last December into the project.
Yeah, it's a very good point that this has been something we've been working on for over a year in looking at planning all the different opportunities and how best can we encompass everything that has happened at Iowa State and all the commitment from our students, faculty, and staff over the last 10 years. It's amazing to look back and say, oh, yeah, 10 years ago, this wasn't happening, this wasn't happening, this wasn't here. And so Molly and Maddie have put together an entire year of events, and each month is based upon a particular theme related to a particular area of sustainability or sustainable commitment. And around that theme, then, not only do we have a specific event that allows engagement, but we also have a number of educational components. We have different posters that we're producing. We have a great blog posting series that Molly and Maddie have put together. We have a very robust social media exposure as well through the wonderful creativity of the intern team, not myself in that case, and just a lot of great exposure all over campus.
So what do you blog about?
So as Mary said, we have different months and different themes every month, and basically that started by looking at all these facts and all the cool things we had done and kind of chunking them together by month. So for example, our August theme was moving green, and with that we kind of took how are all the ways cyclones and Ames community members are moving green in like a physical way. So using recreation services, fitness classes, outdoor rec trips, stuff like that. But then also how is Cyride moving green by using recycled oil as fuel, things like that. So we kind of chunk that all together. And then the blog pieces are really chock full of all those facts and kind of fun information on where have we came, what have we done, where are we going, and also giving some challenge pieces, pictures, and spotlighting different student organizations and people on campus that we were really proud of.
So give us kind of a overview of exactly what you do as part of this initiative.
Yeah, so I would say...
Go ahead.
I would say, like, our role, first of all, a big part of it was just brainstorming, putting this all together. I mean, like Mary said, this has been worked on for a year now, and really just putting the pieces together, really incorporating education, empowerment, and engagement. And then now, since we're kind of in...
When you say putting this together, what is this?
So putting events, like actually planning, putting everything in the pieces, collaborating with different people on campus. So looking at how can we include different clubs and student organizations. Our last month was Dining Green, so looking at how can we include ISU Dining and make sure their voices are being heard. Then putting together the blogs, putting together social media, getting pictures, getting our team, getting volunteers.
Yeah, and so the really fun thing is all these things are happening simultaneously throughout the year. So we just had two events already happen, and we're still brainstorming for some certain details for the spring while putting an event together even next Thursday and hosting that. So it's been a great opportunity for us as students to get that kind of leadership experience, but also for the team to be working on all of these different things and be a part of the action.
And so the connecting thing is the word green, right?
Yes, definitely.
How do you define green? What does that mean? And when you connect all these things?
So I would say I define living green, living a sustainable lifestyle. And we, as the Office of Sustainability, define sustainability as like social, environmental, and economical. So normally people kind of think, oh, live green. So recycling, composting, stuff like that. And we like to really encompass all of it. And I think part of our 10-year anniversary really does that well by focusing on different unique pieces, but really emphasizing also social sustainability and economic sustainability. So what are the benefits from shopping local, which we demonstrate in our November month where we're doing a shop local day. And then also what are the benefits of community giving, volunteering, stuff like that, which again we highlight in January with Giving Green.
Yes, and I would say the this that you mentioned, Ursula, is really the entire celebratory year. So they have been planning that, looking at all the different collaborations that we can make. And there are so many moving pieces related to, there are so many student organizations. There are campus partners. There are different initiatives. All of those have happened in the last 10 years. And there's so much work and effort that has gone into making what we are trying to accomplish as successful as possible. And so we're really excited to continue to look through the rest of the year. We certainly want to invite the Ames community to take part in a number of the different events that are happening, as many as they might be interested in. And we have a very exciting one coming up just in April, and that is our Learning Green theme. So we're looking at all the different ways that Iowa State students are able to have experiences educationally as well as out of the classroom toward sustainability. Increased awareness and experiences. And that happens certainly through our lectures program. It happens through courses. It happens through study abroad opportunities. It happens in so many different ways. And to that effect, we are actually doing a sustainability speaker series where we have three different speakers, each of them representing one of those different areas of sustainability, as Molly mentioned, economic, social, and environmental. They are happening. We have one coming up next week. We had to be mindful of schedules, of course, for speakers. We have one coming up next week that will be looking at social sustainability. And then...
And who is that?
That is Andrew
Kowalski.
Yeah, Andrew Kowalski.
So where will he be speaking?
He will actually be in the Memorial Union in the South Ballroom. Mm-hmm. His lecture starts at 6:30, but we actually have invited student organizations that focus in the area of social sustainability, and the particular area that he focuses on in his work, which has to do with art and particularly printmaking. And we have invited those student organizations to also table so that anybody coming to the lecture has the opportunity to learn a lot of different ways that Iowa State is approaching social sustainability. Then in October, on October 4th, we have Mike Draper coming. He's the founder of Raygun T-shirts. He will be talking about the economic component of sustainability and specifically really how he's made such a phenomenal business literally out of making T-shirts out of pop bottles and the different messaging that he is doing. And he actually has worked with Molly and Maddie to come up with a unique T-shirt that we will be debuting at this event and we'll be selling at the Iowa State University Bookstore. And half of the profits will actually come back and be put into a Student Green Initiatives Fund at Iowa State University. And so we invite the public to buy a T-shirt, come and listen to Mike Draper as well. And then our final speaker actually happens in November, and this is Shudiskat Martinez. This is a 19-year-old individual that has done so much related to environmental sustainability. He's actually spoken at the UN. He has had many sort of legal challenging discussions with different federal entities related to environmental health and the health of those that share the planet. And so that is actually all happening as part of our October theme. And then we still have a number of months after that. Mm-hmm. So
if somebody wants to kind of pursue this and find
yes,
out.
Yes, it's a lot to talk about.
I'm looking at your schedule here.
Yes.
You have a lot going on. September is green dining and foods.
Yes.
And October is environmental and economic social sustainability.
Mm-hmm.
You have a whole itinerary here. Where can this be found?
On the Iowa State University Live Green website. So that address is livegreen, all one word, at iastate.edu. If they want to email us, they can email us at that same address with the at sign, of course.
So the website is livegreen.iastate.edu. And you really outline here all the different ways that you're approaching the talk of sustainability.
Yes. So and it is very much a community celebration as well as a campus celebration. Mm-hmm. A couple of the events in November, the local shopping event that Molly mentioned, and also in February, we're looking at having coffee conversations on sustainability, both on campus and in the community. So we realize that our success toward a sustainable future most definitely involves a community and campus commitment and engagement.
Mm-hmm. So this has been a long-term commitment for you.
Yeah, definitely. I've loved it, but it has been.
And Molly actually has been an intern. This is, you're going on a few years
third
now.
Year.
Yeah, her third year. She's done different responsibilities, and Maddie is going on her second year.
So what has this done to your life?
I would say it's definitely made me think more about sustainable choices I make, but also got me more excited to talk to people about sustainability. Like before I had this position, it's never a topic that I really mentioned, but now it's something that I frequently talk about with family, friends, and also just the community. So I kind of forgot to mention one of the big roles and big pieces we do in our position, I guess, is just to get people excited and get people interested in not only this anniversary, but also just sustainability as a whole. That's kind of, I guess, I think our main goal is really to help educate, empower, and engage. But like, what does that really mean? Really get people interested, get people changing their actions and doing stuff like that.
What do you find works? How do you get people to think about this? What's your most compelling entry into the topic?
Yeah, definitely. I would say as a student, I think giving students easy ideas of how they can be sustainable. So no, you don't have to go out and buy a Prius. You don't have to change your entire lifestyle. But hey, bring a reusable coffee cup next time you go to Starbucks.
Yeah, pack a lunch instead of buying a lunch on campus, things like that. Small, measurable things that they can be aware of and also be very accountable for.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, too, is really showing students that it's not only environmental sustainability, it's social and economic. So showing kids that you might already be doing things that are actually really interesting and really sustainable and things that we're happy to share, but they just don't even know that that's part of Live Green.
Mm-hmm. And what is the benefit of social sustainability?
So social sustainability specifically, I would say really includes, you know, giving back, so helping your community, but also diversity, inclusion, and kind of all those pieces. And so I think there's a natural benefit from having a diverse community and then also just having a community that wants to give and wants to support each other.
Mm-hmm. Madeline, do you find that people on campus are receptive to these ideas? Is there interest in sustainability?
Definitely. I think our generation as a whole is very open to new ideas and thoughts. And so when they stop and talk to us at a booth on campus or at an event, they're open to learning what is sustainability. Is it outside of the kind of the realm I already imagined? And then looking at that definition that we give them with the three facets and kind of reflecting on that in their life. How can I make a small difference in each facet to make a better world? And I think that is definitely the mindset of every Iowa State student. They want to make an impact in any way they can.
And what do you personally get out of it?
So for me, I love learning about the small things that I can do. And I bring it back to my family and my hometown too. Like, oh, hey, Mom, you don't have to grab that plastic bag for your fruit at the grocery store. And it's kind of fun to share those things. So I love learning about them and then applying them in every way. And then also it's really changed the way I look at where I want to work in the future and a future employer. So I've been looking for that social corporate responsibility component a lot when looking on my job hunt.
So it gives you another way to look at the future.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you. Mary, any last words?
I just encourage people to celebrate with us. This has been something that without the entire community, that certainly we wouldn't be celebrating all that we are. And so encouraging people to go to our website, learn more. Website again, livegreen.iastate.edu. And certainly they're very welcome to contact us as well at livegreen@iastate.edu.
Yeah, it looks like you've made this a lot of fun, too.
We have made it fun. Well, see, that's why I have these enthusiastic, passionate students with me, to make sure that we always have fun.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for
coming.
Our
pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
10-year anniversary for the Live Green program at Iowa State at livegreen.iastate.edu for more information. And thank you for coming by this morning. Really appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. We'll see you next month.
See you next month, Mary.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk, Friday on KHOI Radio. Welcome back. I'm Dennis Hart, one of your co-hosts for today, along with Ursula Rudenberg. We are very happy to have you here, and we're very happy to have our next guests here. Susan Guiazda, public relations extraordinaire person from the City of Ames. Welcome, Susan.
Thanks. That's on my business card.
There you go, extraordinaire. And Mark Ganson, extraordinaire engineer, City of Ames. Mark, welcome.
Thank you.
We've got a lot to talk about. Let's get right into it. We've got a football game coming up tomorrow, maybe the biggest game of the season for Iowa State. Thousands of fans, biggest crowd out there to see us beat the University of Oklahoma. As my mic goes right down below me here. I'm holding on to the mic, folks. It's radio. Mark, South Duff Avenue. It's open, but it's been under flagmen, and it's had restrictions. What kind of restrictions tomorrow?
Sure. We're going to have reduced width on the lanes, no shoulder along South Duff. We will have two lanes open, one lane in each direction throughout all of game day traffic. Just want to remind people, it is an active construction site. Please use some caution traveling through there.
Can we expect it to be jammed up because of the construction? We've got a lot of cars coming in from the south for the football game. I mean, people are going to have to take some more time to get through there, aren't they?
Absolutely. It's jammed up on a normal football game, so it's probably going to be a little worse. As always, if there are alternate routes that could also work for you, I urge you to kind of consider those and try and stay out of the construction site as best as possible, and probably the safest route to go. But it is open for those who need it, and hopefully it flows fairly smoothly.
Listeners, you have been warned about South Duff Avenue tomorrow for this football game. Start early. The game starts at 11. You ought to start a lot earlier than that if you're coming up Duff. Let's talk about 13th Street, that major east-west artery that goes through Ames. It's been shut down for months now for a major construction project from about the railroad tracks near Northwestern, and now it's shut down all the way to Harding for major construction. What's the update on that? What's the latest?
Sure. The first big change that's going to be occurring is the west side of the project should reopen today. The pavement markings were striped yesterday, which means we should be able to open it up all the way through the Northwestern intersection. That way our detour would change to Northwestern instead of Ridgewood. We'd get some of that traffic off of the local road on Ridgewood over on Northwestern. Should handle it a little better, a little safer, and it should allow high school traffic to function a little better too.
So you're still going to be blocked at Northwestern, but you can get off on Northwestern.
That's right.
If you're going east. What about the rest of the project going to Harding Avenue?
Absolutely. We got water main in. We're currently in the process of testing that water main to make sure everything's good with it. Then we have probably a week or two of sanitary and storm sewer improvements underground. Following those improvements, we'd get everything backfilled and kind of get moving towards paving operations.
So when do you think the entire street might be reopened?
That's a tough one.
I always ask tough questions.
I understand. Assuming pretty good weather here, probably early November would be my guess.
Okay. Susan? South Grand Avenue, the extension project, a major big deal in this community as the city tries to find an alternative route to South Duff Avenue. Some big things happened on Tuesday night at the council.
Yeah, we had some land acquisition that was approved, and that gets us a step closer. Just a summary of that project for people who don't know, if you're driving on South Grand, you end right now and you can't go any further. But wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be great to get all the way to South 16th Street?
It would be so great.
It really would be great. And you wouldn't be driving on South Duff. Some people don't enjoy South Duff. So the whole goal of that project is to open that north-south arterial all the way down to South 16th Street. But also, though, bonus, South 5th would connect with South Grand, which would be another way to improve traffic flow. So at Tuesday's council meeting, they approved some land acquisition that will help us with that South 5th extension towards South Grand. And some property next to the Boys and Girls Club was purchased. We also received a $100,000 grant from the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship to create a stormwater wetland on that property. So right now, if you are driving down Walnut Street and you make that sharp right angle turn, that land right in front of you will become the wetland. We saw some very attractive artist renderings of what that wetland might look like. And again, if you've lived in Ames any period of time, you probably have seen water on that property. So it can take on water. A wetland would give that water the opportunity to kind of soak in and percolate and clean before it returns back into the river. That's always our goal, is to return things better than we found them. Yeah.
So the South Grand Project is a multi-year effort. This is going
Absolutely.
To be several
so
years
down the road.
So we are
still working on land acquisition, working on those connections, but it's happening. While it is staying on schedule, this will take several years to complete. It's extensive.
And you can read more about the project in yesterday's Ames Tribune in an article written by a guy named Dennis Hart.
Yeah, I think he was there.
I don't know how that happened there. you want to talk about Welch Avenue as well.
I do. So Welch Avenue is a very popular street. It's in part of the campus town area. Welch Avenue from Lincoln Way to Chamberlain is a business district, and we have the opportunity to reconstruct that street. Really, the impetus for the street reconstruction was the infrastructure under the street. The water, sewer, stormwater is very antiquated, probably some of the oldest in the city. You're probably aware of all the buildup and high-density buildings in the area. That infrastructure can no longer support the need from all those businesses. So in replacing that infrastructure, we also have this opportunity to add some amenities to the street. Some of the streetscape features could be updated. And so that gives you a chance to look at things like extended sidewalks, landscaping. Do you have greenery, places for people to gather, picnic tables, bike lanes, parking?
Yeah.
So the problem is that you have all these things you want, but in this case, you don't have a lot of space.
Yeah.
So you have to prioritize. So we know that Welch Avenue is important to a lot of people. It is the central business core of that area, and people like to gather there. They have thoughts about it. They socialize there. So we have a survey on our website, and the survey is going to close very soon on Sunday. But we'd like people to go to the survey, cityofames.org/Welch Ave, Welch A-V-E, and take the survey about what's important to them. It makes you prioritize. Is parking important to you, or is extended sidewalks, sidewalk cafes that are more pedestrian feel important to you?
Yeah. You have a ton of other things coming up in the city, and we have about 5 minutes, so jump in, Susan.
Okay.
I know you're loaded today.
I do. For those of you who want to get healthy or like to stay healthy, just remember the City of Ames always participates in the Healthiest State Walk. That's set for October 3rd. You've got plenty of notice. Downtown, we have the Mayor's Walk, typically led by the mayor. This year, the mayor cannot be here, so it'll be led by the mayor pro tem or a city council member at noon on Wednesday, October 3rd. Please gather at the front of City Hall. We will go for a little jaunt around downtown. It's always a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. I've done that walk. It is a lot of fun.
Yeah. So some other things going up. We get a lot of phone calls about this time of year about Yard Waste Free Days. We talked about them last month, but I cannot remind people enough. And also, I'm so sorry, but there is a typo in our Cityside newsletter that's going out right now. So let me go over those dates one more time. Yard Waste Free Days for fall would be Saturday, October 20th, Saturday, November 3rd, Saturday, November 17th, and Saturday, December 1st. Now, that last date in our newsletter says December 2nd. They're always on a Saturday. That would be a Sunday. That's not correct.
Okay.
So again, and I know you always help me by putting these on your website.
Yes.
October 20th, November 3rd, November 17th, and December 1st.
Okay. All right.
Also, if you're planning ahead, a couple events for your calendar. The fire station will hold its annual open house in connection with Fire Prevention Week. So that puts our open house this year on Saturday, October 13th.
And that's a fun event.
It's a great event. It's particularly geared towards kids. Of course, they love the fire trucks and all the activity, but it's not without information for adults. So it's a great all-ages activity. It is from 9 to noon. It is a football Saturday. I don't know what time the game will be at this point, but I think you could probably do both.
Probably so, yeah.
And if you're active in the community, you might want to put the Neighborhood Summit on your calendar, which is an annual, we try to do it annually, meeting between neighborhood groups or neighbors and the city council, basically identifying issues, looking at things where we can improve communications, connect people with resources. That will be on October 16th at 7 p.m. in the council chambers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a lot of my stuff. I will put in a big plug and a reminder for the Ames on the Go app. If you're a person that's out and about and you have your phone handy, and who doesn't?
Yes. In fact, I often walk and be looking at my phone while I'm walking down the sidewalk. A very bad practice,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, and we don't want people to be on their phones in their vehicles.
Yes.
But
yes.
When people are out and about and they notice something like a large pothole or a manhole cover that's popped up or debris that is blocking a storm grate, a storm sewer, We ask them, a quick way to report that information is to download the Ames on the Go app from the it's an Android and an Apple app. You can download it and quickly report these issues. And I've been on it. It's fun. I've been on it on my phone. It has mapping a mapping ability, so you can take pictures. You just send in the issue, and then it maps your issue, and you can see if other people have identified the issue. And then it gives you a constant stays in constant contact with you about the status of your issue, like we're on it or we've resolved it. So,
well, that's the question. After I do this, let's say I do this and do it safely and do it accurately, what mm-hmm. happens then? Who reads it and how quickly do they read it?
So I don't, Mark, the app sort of sends it through a series of people who it would go to our maintenance supervisor or somebody, uh-huh. and then they would say it's been assigned to somebody. I mean, okay. it shows you step by step what's happened to it. And it also, again, it shows you on the map where all the other reported okay. things are, and it gives you the status. You can look at other people's reports. Cool. You don't have to just look at yours. So it is pretty fun. We hope to expand that to other departments. You had mentioned
streetlights. Right.
You can always report those through various forms to the city. I get streetlight outings on Twitter. I get them on Facebook, email, phone call. And if you report them on the app, although it's not specifically for other departmental concerns, it will eventually get routed to the proper department.
Okay. Busy time. Mark Anson, one last question for you. Again on South Duff Avenue, what do you recommend for people coming to the game tomorrow from the South?
Get going a little early and take your time going through there. Reduced speed, 25 mile an hour, reduced width of 10 feet. So if you don't meet that lane width, find an alternate route. And if you can obey that speed limit, that'd be great.
You bet. Okay. You have been, again, alerted, listeners. Tomorrow, lots of fans coming up to see the Oklahoma game. Start early. Be prepared to slow down and see the Cyclones beat the Oklahoma Sooners tomorrow. How's that for a prediction?
I like it.
Mark Anson and Susan Guiazda of the City of Ames, as always, thank you for coming in. You are a plethora of information, and we always appreciate you being here. Thank you, too.
And you have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and the intrepid Mr. Dennis Hart.
Intrepid, I like that. Local Talk airs at, I don't know what that means, 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here.
Actually, on Friday, it's 5
p.m. You are correct. I was too intrepid. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 5 p.m. here on KHOI at 89.1 FM. And also remember, please, that you can hear a recording of this broadcast, and I'm sure you're going to want to, later today online at khoifm.org. And find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. There were a lot of guests and a whole lot of information. Also, remember that KHOI is streaming live online right now at khoifm.org.
Our engineer today was Aladdin. Thank you, Aladdin.
Thank you, Aladdin.
And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris on their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So, if you'd like to try your hand at reporting and see how much fun it is, come on down. We'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
Thank you for being with us today on Local Talk. And remember that you are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. And
we'll see you again
on the radio.
We hope so.
Support for KHOI is provided in part by the Iowa State Center, presenting Kenny G, November 28th at 8 p.m. Tickets and more information can be found at center.iastate.edu. That's center.iastate.edu.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. The Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun every Saturday, located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza. The Farmers Market brings fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment.